All right, we may begin. Dennis Banks.
The last time that I had a chance to speak to a judge, I was ready to be sentenced.
Oh. That won't happen today.
I've had a chance to be on the campus only 4 or 5 hours. And I've had a chance to walk around and talk to a couple of students. And we had lunch with a very young, charming girl named Alicia. So my remarks will be confined to what I believe is not only a personal issue, but a national issue. First of all, I'd asked if there was any a Native American cultural house on campus, and there's none. That kind of confused me, because earlier I sat in here and I heard all these allocates of all these honors and gifts and stuff like that that was happening to the school because of the mascot, but there's been no honor for Native people in that area. Yet we have a black house, black cultural house, which is certainly needed, Latino house, which is are needed, but no effort to even learn about the Native people. I heard this morning about a compromise, but I want to say, Judge, that there cannot be a compromise on this issue. There cannot be a compromise. And I heard all these young people, white people, talking about how good the chief has been to them, and then hearing of the non-effort by the school to help Native people, I would think that this chief issue is part of the school's affirmative action program, because, you know, they believe that they're doing good, but they're not honoring Native people. They're hurting Native people. And this border regions, I think, should understand very clearly that the American Indian Movement, who I speak for, has a great deal of contacts around this country. And we know that sports and the athletic programs, that it means big money. We know that. And they know that. But I also want to leave this word that the American Indian Movement will campaign very heavily to the affirmative, or to the accrediting agency, and ask them to deny accreditation to this school until the chief is gone. The songs that you've been hearing outside, good songs by Native singers, I want you to know that the death song for the chief has started. And I said I would never come here, but when I heard that this was an issue today, I decided then to come. So I hope that they make a good decision today. I know they won't make it today, but we will campaign. Is there any dialogue?
The session was labeled as a dialogue, and the dialogue has consisted in this some pretty much alternating expression of views. Okay.
My name is Laura Schmidt, and I'm an alumna of the U of I. I earned a BA in English and an MS in journalism. My late father was an alumnus too. My family and I proudly sponsor an undergraduate scholarship in his name in the Department of Civil Engineering. I'm here today to speak on my behalf as well as my family's behalf. I'd like to thank the Board of Trustees for giving me the opportunity to express my opinion. Like many of the people here today, I feel very passionately about the chief issue. When I sat down to write this statement, I had to admit that I was surprised the chief was still an issue. But on further reflection, I realized that he has become just another target for the politically correct movement. Sadly, this PC tidal wave is drowning free speech and thought at not only this university, but institutions of higher learning nationwide. Those who embrace PC use inflammatory words and accusations to get everyone to bow to their opinions. In the chief debate, their position is clear. The chief is racist and he must go. There are many people in this community who do not believe that. They admire and respect the chief and what he stands for. However, they fear expressing that opinion because then they will be branded a racist, or they fear that others will think of them to be less than enlightened. I reject this PC movement completely because it is intolerant and intellectually dishonest. I urge the anti-chief activists to listen to what supporters of the chief are saying. The chief is not a mascot. The chief is much different than that. I, like thousands of others, respect him and take pride in all that he represents. I say this to those who oppose the chief. If it's the dance you object to, then let's modify it. If it's the use of the chief's likeness that you don't like, then let's work with the Board of Trustees to license his image very judiciously. Rather than cave into PC pressure, I suggest that the board accept any positive, constructive suggestions and make the chief into an even better tool to educate people in the proud history and traditions of the Illini tribe from which our university and our state take their names. If the board takes a strong stand and puts this issue to rest once and for all, then everyone, including the anti-chief activists and those for the chief, will be able to devote their energy to tackling real issues and instances of injustice. I urge the board to take that stand in favor of the chief. Thank you.
Judge Garippo and members of the Board of Trustees. I'm Linda Long Fainter, and I am representative of the Western Band of Cherokees in Oklahoma, but I also live in Illinois. And I also represent, I'm one of the board members of the American Indian Council of Illinois, which was established in 1996 to address issues facing Indian people in Illinois that are not being faced or addressed. I want to bring to your attention things that people have forgotten. And this has to do with veterans, and recently you will see veterans in Walmart stores fundraising for a memorial on the mall in Washington, D.C. To my knowledge, there has never been a memorial to veterans. What you are not aware of is that in World War II, the 82nd Airborne out of Fayetteville, North Carolina, which my dad is one of the handful of survivors, along with four Native American Dakota Sioux Indian men in Minnesota. I want to read some excerpts from What is a Veteran that was a handout that the veterans gave me, and it's by Father Dennis Edward O'Brien with the U.S. Marine Corps. You can't tell a vet just by looking. It is the soldier, not the reporter, who has given us freedom of the press. It is the soldier, not the poet, who has given us freedom of speech. It is the soldier, not the campus organizer, who has given us freedom to demonstrate. That right is our right through the U.S. Constitution, the supreme law of the land, First Amendment rights, freedom of speech, which is denied to some people. When Indian people decide to take on an issue like Charlene Teeters or Michael Haney, if somebody doesn't want to hear what they have to say, then we want to teach them a lesson and throw them in jail, which happens to a lot of Native Americans. Charlene was in jail for 24 hours, which she was invoking her First Amendment rights, and I think that's very wrong. That's why I wanted to remind you of this from the 82nd Airborne, because these people are the ones who gave you your freedom to sit on this board at the University of Illinois. But that freedom does not always exist for Native Americans in employment or religious freedom. We express ourselves in dance and music, which Chief Alinawick does not portray. It is a mockery for the university to retain Chief Alinawick. It is yet another incident of power and greed at the expense of the American Indian culture. Where are your values? Is money your God? Because I hear threats today about taking money back, donating money if you don't retire Chief Alinawick. I get tired of things coming down to the almighty dollar. One other thing I want to remind you of, the 82nd Airborne. These men are in the honor guard at the club in Minnesota, the Indian Club. They are in the honor guard, and most people are not aware of, when I give presentations to grade school children in the fourth grade, that under the Lincoln administration, the largest mass execution occurred in Minnesota. They hung 38 Indian leaders for retaliating because the government failed to follow through with their obligations, and they were starving their families, their men, women, and children, their elders. And the parents say to me, well, we don't know about that. I said, that's right, because you're not going to find it in a textbook. I said, that's why I'm here to tell you this. This is the most spiritual group of people I have ever met in my entire life. If you were to view the documentary In Whose Honor, your trustees, Gravenhorst, and I think his name is Lamont, say, well, maybe American Indians don't understand. Maybe they should attend your game at the stadium. Excuse me, but we understand. We are highly mentally intelligent, and what we understand is that we have tried to be diplomatic in asking that you retire Chief Alinawick as taxpayers in Illinois.
My name is Elaine Gehrman, and I am co-pastor of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Urbana-Champaign. I understand the powerful, positive feelings that many people associate with Chief Alinawick. I think it speaks to a deep and profound longing in us for connections to the past, to ancestral traditions, to spirituality, for deeper connections to one another and to the larger creation. Many of us long for a symbol to unite us and transform us, to stir our emotions and uplift our spirits. But we do both the indigenous peoples of this land and ourselves a great disservice by trying to appropriate their connections to the past, their ancestral traditions, their spirituality. These symbols and sacred objects are not ours to do with as we wish. In this country of religious pluralism and diversity, we rely upon one another to show respect for our varying religious beliefs and practices. Many of us would be deeply shocked and offended if someone were to incorporate a cross or a Bible into a halftime entertainment show, especially if it clearly showed that that person had no understanding or respect for the very sacred meaning of those items for us. We cannot always know the meaning of a sacred object or symbol based upon our own knowledge or experience. We often need to look to the particular religious group in order to discover the meaning and significance of a religious item or ritual. As the dominant culture in a country of many subcultures, we need to be very careful about our responsibility to avoid cultural misappropriation, basically taking what does not belong to us. Unfortunately, we have a long and not very honorable tradition in this country of taking what does not belong to us, especially from Native Americans. We have inherited this history, but we have an opportunity to stop this dishonorable tradition here and now at this university. As a clergy person in this community, I find the lack of respect and desecration of another religion's sacred symbols and rituals to be not only offensive, but dangerous to the climate of religious freedom and tolerance that is so central to our campus, our community, and our country. I find it to be a tragic and painful irony that we, many of us descendants of those who came to this country to flee religious intolerance and persecution in Europe, have continued to perpetuate a form of religious persecution and oppression similar to that which our ancestors sought to escape. And I do not believe that we would tolerate any other religion's sacred objects and rituals to be so misunderstood, misused, and mocked. We can't do anything about the thefts and lies that our American forebears perpetrated on the indigenous people they encountered. But I'm convinced that we can and must do something about the cultural theft and religious misappropriation that continues today. All religious persons of conscience have an obligation to protest the desecration and abuse of Native American sacred symbols and rituals. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Jonna McGregor. I'm a senior in sociology here at the University of Illinois. I also work with the Progressive Resource Action Cooperative, a group that has delivered numerous anti-chief speeches to the board over the last 10 years. The following is a composite of several of these speeches. In October of 1946, Julius Streicher was convicted at Nuremberg of crimes against humanity. His crime, authoring anti-Semitic articles, editorials, cartoons, and images. These images depicted Jewish people in such a derogatory manner so as to dehumanize them and help make possible the extermination of 6 million Jewish people by the Third Reich. The tribunal found him complicit in genocide and deserving of death by hanging. 54 years later, our Chief Illiniwek mascot carries in Julius Streicher's tradition of racism. The chief, in many Native societies, holds the revered role of a political and spiritual leader. To take that role and turn it into a vehicle of entertainment at a halftime show is an insult. It would be akin to having a mascot of the Pope celebrating communion in the middle of a football field. Such distorted caricatures of a people make possible their dehumanization. The United Nations 1948 Convention on Punishment and Prevention of the Crime of Genocide makes it a crime against humanity to foster those conditions which promote the eradication of an identifiable human group, thus stating in no uncertain terms the causal relationship between racist propaganda and the implementation of racist social policy. Non-Native people since 1492 have claimed by force the right to own, sell, and mock Native American culture, to misrepresent, commodify, and desecrate Native American religion, to humiliate, defame, and invalidate the voices of Native American students, elders, and spiritual leaders. Over 500 years later, the subordination is just as real. Only the instrument of oppression today is a prancing Chief Illiniwek. Joe Gaughan, a former student at UIUC, stated, quote, "The chief is not created randomly or out of thin air. It follows in well-worn trajectories in the American historical tradition of how we represent Indian people, and that qualifies as a racial stereotype," end quote. The place and time for honor and reparation is not at a halftime minstrel show. If the UI administration wanted to honor Native history and culture, it would have established a Native American studies program and cultural center. If the administration was interested in serving its Native American students, it would have hired a dean of Native American students. Instead, our administration has lied to and cheated the campus community. In 1997, board member Susan Gravenhorst stated, quote, "I just want to make sure that everyone understands that the university has a very strong commitment to the Native American students," end quote. A few years ago, Gravenhorst demonstrated this commitment by promising Native American students a dean. Native students were strung along in the selection process for almost a year, only to be told that funding for this position had magically disappeared. That's not really what I would call commitment. It sounds more like something I once read of former U.S. President Andrew Jackson. In an 1830 statement to Congress, he said, quote, "Toward the Aborigines of this country, no one can indulge a more friendly feeling than myself," end quote. Now, this is coming from a man who spent the greater portion of his life implementing such racist policies as the Indian Removal Act, which resulted in the infamous Trail of Tears. In conclusion, I would like to reiterate, The existence of racist propaganda facilitates the implementation of racist social policy. An indispensable step in making the U of I more inclusive of all persons is the elimination of Chief Illiniwek. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, those who have prepared remarks, if you would leave a copy of your prepared remarks, it would be helpful for the court reporter. Just go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Henry Emmerly, and I'm a senior in cell and structural biology and psychology. I've been involved for the last 3 years with the Progressive Resource Action Cooperative in the movement to retire the chief. The chief is wrong in the same way that any racist stereotype is. Namely, it serves to marginalize, trivialize, and disrespect those it pretends to represent, regardless of claimed intent. The argument has been made today that without the chief, University of Illinois students would not be able to know anything about Native American, and specifically Illini culture. But how can I learn about the true Native history from a fictitious and mythological character? Why is it that in my 5 years on this campus that I haven't taken a class in the Department of Native American Studies? Possibly because there is no such department. Why isn't there a Native American cultural house? Why aren't there Native American faculty? Why are there so few Native American students? The chief has created such a hostile campus climate that Native students don't want to come here. It's tragic that the university has chosen racist and demeaning halftime entertainment to educate its students on the history of Native Americans. The chief is a gross misrepresentation that negatively affects all people. In light of what Native Americans and community members have said today and have been saying over the years, I request that the board reconsider statements that they have made in the past, such as a quote from Gerald W. Shea, quoted in the News Gazette, March 5th, 1999. I just think it's a good thing. I've not seen any Native American groups raising any big outcry. And Susan Gravenhorst, in 1997. I still feel that if I were a Native American person, I would be complimented. We have taken a particular person from a particular group and edified him, and everyone thinks so highly of him. And I think that this would be a source of pleasure to you. These statements not only show the board's complete disregard for the real impact of the issue, but also violate the university's own policies. And here I quote from page one of the Code on Campus Affairs. The University of Illinois claims commitment to foster programs within the law which will ameliorate or eliminate, where possible, the effects of historic societal discrimination, to comply fully in all university activities and programs with applicable federal and state laws relating to non-discrimination and equal opportunity. It is clear from the testimony of Native Americans and community members today that the chief is both a historic and continuing societal discrimination and honors no one. It's obvious that the board has ignored their commitment to the university and the community for the last 74 years. The fact that the chief still exists is an insult to what the university claims to stand for. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Lisa Johnson, and I am representing the Social Justice Committee of the School of Social Work here at UIUC. We are here to voice our opposition to the use of Chief Illiniwek as a symbol of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. If we accept the pro-chief argument that Chief Illiniwek should remain as the symbol of UIUC because it is a great tradition of the university, are we then accepting that slavery, which was also a great tradition of the U.S., should have remained? Are we saying that civil rights for minorities should have been denied? Are we saying that restricting women from voting should have continued? Was the use of black faces in theatrical presentations a tradition that should not have ceased? Today, few would claim that slavery, denying minorities their civil rights, women's restriction from voting, or the use of black faces in entertainment are great traditions of our past. Society has taken great strides to eliminate these seemingly great traditions. Why should these efforts end with Native Americans? In 50 years, will people be wondering why there was a need to have this discussion today? Indeed, it simply should not be an issue. We know that great tradition does not mean that it is right to ignore the negative impacts it has on a minority group that has been and continues to be oppressed by the majority. Thus, we want to demonstrate that merely because something is or was a tradition, it does not speak at all to the righteousness of the effect and impact of such traditions. Supporters of Chief Illiniwek have proudly claimed that the real issue here is intent, that they mean no harm in maintaining the chief. Rather, they claim that the chief is meant to honor and respect Native Americans. The problem is that intentions are not what determines the degree to which something is acceptable. Regardless of what they hope will be the effect of their actions, the reality of the situation is quite different. For as we understand, the chief does not honor. It humiliates, it is not respectful, it is derogatory. It plainly does not achieve what it is intended to do. Keeping the chief would set a harmful precedent, which would exclaim to the world that it does not matter how an institution's actions affect a group of people. It would say that intent is sufficient to justify one's actions. We conclude by quoting from the university's non-discrimination statement, which states, "The commitment of the university to the most fundamental principles of academic freedom, equality of opportunity, and human dignity requires that decisions involving students and employees be based on individual merit and free from insidious discrimination in all its forms. Retaining the chief as the mascot of the U of I is in direct violation of this statement. Thus, we call for the immediate and unconditional removal of Chief Illiniwek from the U of I. Doing so would be to take a step towards closing the gap between words and actions. Thank you."
Hello. My name is Andy Erickson. I'm a student at your university. And sometimes I'm not very proud to be a student at this university. Because of this, not the forum, but the reason we have to have this forum. If I knew what I knew now about racism at this university, I probably would have taken my money elsewhere. I guess I got a little heated right before we took the lunch break. I saw a tour group of parents of prospective students. I think that's who they were. I told them not to bring their kids here because the board doesn't care about the Native American community. Excuse me. You've shown time and time again that you don't care. That's why there was a Native American woman crying here, right where I'm standing earlier today. She said she couldn't come to this university because she felt that it was too racist. It wasn't honor that made her cry. It was racism. And I'm not saying it's blatant racism. I'm not saying that you're directly telling her that she's subhuman or that she doesn't, her people are inferior or anything like that, but that's what you imply every time you let the chief prance around on the football field and every time you tell Native American organizations that you don't want to hear what they have to say. I know that the chief isn't supposed to be offensive, but it is. I know that the chief's supporters don't see anything wrong with it, but they're not the ones being mocked every time the chief prances around on our football field. Every major Native American organization has denounced our mascot. Doesn't that bother you? I know it bothers them. It bothers them that we're so unwilling, that this university is so unwilling to discontinue this mockery of their culture. It makes them cry. Is this honor? The University of Illinois, which claims to be so advanced, is behind the times socially. There is no reason why it is more important to keep this mascot than it is to end the humiliation we are causing an entire race of people. I know that the university has continually denied that the chief is racist in any way, and you can deny it as much as you want, but the university mascot is still causing pain to the Native American community, and it's real pain, and it's the pain of racism. And the pain of racism is a lot more piercing than the pain that will be felt from losing the chief. I understand the supporters' positions, though it may not seem like it. My father went to school here, my grandfather went to school here, my mother went to school here, they all loved the chief. And I'm sure that if my grandfather heard what I'm saying right now, he would be very upset with me, and I don't like that. But I know that his pain would go away. The pain of racism never goes away. It does not go away. And the mascot is racist because the Native American community feels it. They know it's racist, and other people do too. And you need to do the right thing. I know you've heard that a bunch, but I think you know what it is. So we're going to keep coming back until either you do the right thing or someone is sitting in those chairs who has enough compassion to understand that there is no place for racism at the University of Illinois. So I just want to say one more time, I challenge you to find one good reason why it's more important to keep this mascot than it is to end the real humiliation, not honor, that we are causing an entire race of people. Thank you for letting...
Good afternoon. My name is Joseph Perales. I'm a Comanche Yaqui Indian member of the American Indian Movement, founder of the AICI, NAPA, which is Native American Foster Parents Association, Chicago's Native American Urban Indian Retreat. I'm employed as a prosthetist and orthotist at a laboratory. What I want to say that the issue of this chief is this. It's not an issue of political correctness. It's subtle racism. That's what it is. So subtle, people are blinded from hearing the truth. Truth comes down the street and everybody wants to run. Nobody wants to hear it. Well, the issue is, this is it. Cheyenne River Indian Reservation, children were being inoculated by the FDA with experimental drugs. And they were told to the parents, don't worry about it, we're just going to see what this drug does. Parents were not aware of what was going on. That diminished Indian human life. And that has, and I grew up in a time in this country, in this century, that I saw that as a youth, as a young boy. And as times change, we have to change. So does the university and its perspectives. If the issue is money, you have to look at these alumni people who may have intended to have the chief as an honorable thing in the beginning, but now is askewed. Just like our government. The founding fathers for this government had a great idea. The country's still standing. But now, things are going awry to some degree. We question our government. So, we question his chief. Same thing. So we look at this and we say to ourselves, what is this? If I saw this person 5 years ago dancing. That was not a dance. It was very offensive. As a Native person, I dance, but I cannot dance a dance that I would like to dance because I can no longer physically do that. In order for me to do what I have to do as a Native person, I have to attain rights to do that. When this so-called chief can do this blatantly, that's subtle racism, without consideration to the people who it affects. Napoleon was right. The victor gets to write history. And this is what you're perpetuating. The chief perpetuates the domination of a dysfunctional European process. It's not the way Native men are taking care of their families, their children, and their wives. This is not a chief. A chief is a father, he's a son, he's a brother, he's an uncle. He's a caretaker, he's a giver. This chief is nothing other than a clown that I see it to be. And clowns are respected in Native communities because they're taught to be clowns. They're supposed to take what's serious in our lives and look at, give people a different perspective to really look at what they're seeing or how they're acting. This clown does not do that either. So in closing, I say this. Your alumni, the old alumni who would like to keep the chief, they're going to die soon. Just like me and you. Our time is limited. You have to look forward to new money coming in. When my son finishes his tour with the United States Marine Corps, he wants to go to university. I have to tell him, you have to think about this one and really consider it. You will lose money for the future if money is the issue. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, my Indian brother. My name is Roxy Greeno. I'm a Menominee from Menominee Nation, Wisconsin, and I work in Chicago. I'm the executive director for the Native American Foster Parents Association and the Indian Child Welfare Agency. I am the mother of four, the grandmother to 12, and the foster mother to over 30 Native American children. And I'm here on behalf of my children. I pray every day. And I teach my children to pray. And I've asked them to pray for the decision that you know as Board of Trustees you need to make. on this decision, on this issue here of the mascot. My children, as my brother Joe had said, are the future, are the ones that'll be sitting at this table, are attending this school, and it's and they won't have to look at no Chief Alinowick. I know that the decision that you will be making, and I've prayed about this, is going to be positive towards our people, the Native people in this country. It's going to be a right decision. I know you'll be losing some money, but you should be feeling good in your hearts because you know that that's the right thing to do. I pray every day, and I will continue to pray every day, and I ask all my brothers and sisters, Native and non-Native, to pray and help you for the strength to make this decision that you need to make today or in the future. Thank you.
My name is Todd Eisler. I'm a Champaign resident. I would like to begin with a quote. Instead of asking how much damage will the work in question bring about, why not ask how much good, how much joy? Henry Miller, The Air-Conditioned Nightmare. Those protesting the chief seem unwilling to even think of asking how much good, how much joy as far as this symbol is concerned. In other words, they refuse to see the possibilities of good in any point of view other than their own. And that is what I find so disheartening, that those who constantly scream for respect are now showing no respect for any viewpoint other than their own narrow one, and that the same ones who are calling for tolerance will show absolutely no tolerance for anyone else's opinion. This is especially distressing and bitterly ironic in the case of the English department's recent call to end the chief's reign. One would think one of the very first to step forward in defending a form of expression under attack would be the English department of a university. Instead, this one has sadly chosen to join in the fray. There was something which caused a similar controversy back in 1928, when the American Hebrew and Jewish Tribune demanded that a certain corporation pull from its inventory an item, stating the quote, "We charge them with an attempt to cash in on the misery and catastrophe of an important section of the human family," unquote. Does that sound similar to a few of the anti-chief arguments that the university is cashing in by participating in the humiliation of a defeated people? The corporation in question was Houghton Mifflin, and the item was Mein Kampf, a work that can definitely be said to contain stereotypes. Another time, something was demanded by the public to be removed from a public school because, quote, it advocated institutionalized racism and was harmful to the integration process. Was this a school mascot? No, it was the book by Harper Lee, To Kill a Mockingbird. And what of The Grapes of Wrath, which has been attacked by the public for its portrayal of women, are The Adventures of Tom Sawyer and The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, both decried as racist by members of the public and both removed from schools. What am I trying to establish? That the groups who want the chief censored are themselves censored? No. But more than simply the bitter irony of this university's English department calling for the head of Chief Alinowick, I am trying to establish the idea that there lies a connection between those who demanded the removal of those books and those who are now demanding the removal of the chief. If you still doubt, consider the NAACP, which has called for the removal of Chief Alinowick, has also in the past stood as one of the foremost groups demanding the removal of Mark Twain's The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn from the shelves of school libraries, as well as To Kill a Mockingbird. I am attempting to make you see that Chief Alinowick is a form of expression, just as the books I've mentioned were also forms of expression, and those who are demanding his immediate removal from this university's football field are the same sort who would demand the removal of those books from this university's library. To touch upon their argument that his presence dehumanizes Native Americans in the eyes of others, this idea that allowing people to be exposed to certain forms of Navajo expression may compel them to act in a certain way, and therefore the solution is to ban said form of expression, is to take the blame off the shoulders where it belongs, the listener, not the speaker. For I strongly believe that whatever we may be exposed to, as individuals, we are ultimately responsible for deciphering that information, for digesting it, and for whatever actions we choose to take based upon said digestion. Thirdly, if a certain idea can possibly be seen as having a dehumanizing effect, I still insist the best solution is to counter with humanizing speech, also aimed at the target group. For obviously, if they say that speech, talk about negative speech, whatever, speech can have a negative effect, obviously the counter speech should have a positive effect. Instead of just calling for the removal, how about countering with positive speech? In 1995, the Federal Department of Education Civil Rights Office ruled, after an investigation of this issue, that the chief does not create a hostile environment for Native Americans. And I would like to conclude with a quote. It's from John Stuart Mill's work on liberty. The peculiar evil of silencing the expression of an opinion is that it is robbing the human race, posterity as well as the existing generation, those who dissent from the opinion still more than those who hold it. If the opinion is right, they are deprived of the opportunity of exchanging error for truth. If it's wrong, they lose what is almost as great a benefit, the clearer perception and livelier impression of truth produced by its collision with error. Thank you.
I'm the Reverend Jack Kramer Huerman. I'm a born and raised person from the state of Illinois. I'm a graduate of this university. I'm an alumnus. I have a degree from this university in philosophy and history. I'm a donor to this university. I'm a member and officer in one of the booster clubs. I'm a season ticket holder for the women's volleyball. And I believe that it's time to retire Chief Alina Wick. I grew up in a county that was 100% European American. I attended a high school that's identity was the Red Raiders. I played sports in a conference that had a team named the Pekin Chinks. And I found this university to be a very important place for me, where I grew in my understanding of cultural diversity and inclusivity. Many people have talked about Chief Alina Wick as an honored and revered symbol, are an honored and sacred symbol. As a person whose profession is in the religious community, I think I know something about such symbols. And I have listened carefully to my Native American brothers and sisters who are a part of the United Methodist Church and of other faith communities. And they have reminded me about honored and revered symbols, about honored and sacred symbols, in terms of their authenticity, how and where the symbol is displayed, and the unity and pride that it represents as a way to recognize those that are truly honored and revered, are honored and sacred symbols. Questions have been brought up all day long that remind us to really consider the authenticity of Chief Alina Wick. From the music that is used, from the dance steps that are used, to the costume that is a part of it. That symbol raises some serious questions about its authenticity. How and where that symbol is displayed. I have seen it on lampshades. I have seen it on posters. I have seen it on schedules of sporting events. I know various places where that symbol is displayed, and sometimes it does not say much in terms of being honored and revered. And many of today have addressed the questions of whether or not the symbol brings unity and pride to this community. As to the issue of political correctness, sometimes we have to overcome our tendency to exclude, our prejudice and our racism, not based on a set of votes, but because it is simply the right and just and wise choice. In the county where I was raised, it was not considered offensive to not have any other ethnic groups as a part of the population of that county. It was acceptable to have a high school with a team named the Pekin Chinks, and nobody saw anything wrong with that. But it was not the just and right and fair thing to do. Many of you are familiar with Rotary, or involved in Rotary, and I want to remind us of the Rotary four-way test as I conclude these remarks. The Rotary four-way test says, is it the truth? Is it fair to all concerned? Will it build goodwill and better friendship? Will it be beneficial to all concerned? I ask you, as you consider the possibility of retiring this honored and revered symbol, Chief Alina Wick, what is the truth of this? What would be fair to all concerned? What builds goodwill and better friendships? And what is the beneficiality that could come out for our Native American brothers and sisters? Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honor, and the Board. My name is Bruce Two Eagles, and the importance of this coming here, I have cancer of the spine. and I drove 11 and a half hours to be here for 4 minutes. That's how important this is. When I was in the seventh grade, I was called into school. I'm an urban Indian. I was brought up off reservation. And I was called into the school guidance with my mother. And the guidance counselor told my mother, Bruce is very intelligent for an Indian. He should do well in the trades. About 25 years prior to that is when the chief was picked as the mascot here. And I'm sure cultural sensitivity was not part of the picking of the chief. I talked to you today about moral decline of your school, the morality, the things that you've done in the last year and a half to keep your chief. One of those being a letter-writing campaign offering the people on Lakota Reservation $1,000 for the best letter depicting their enthusiasm about the chief. They threw you off reservation. You're going, last year you sent students to the Peoria tribe to get their input, and they lied to their tribal council and were asked to leave the meeting. That's what caused the Peoria tribe to write the resolution you said you got this morning, saying, remove the chief. He's offensive. Your offering of a bounty to the Eastern Band Cherokee graduate students, high school students, to come to University of Illinois because they have the contracts to supply tomahawks and headdresses to the Atlanta Braves. They are trained mascots. You have gone there and offered a bounty for their students. Where is your moral decline? It's right here, and it's live and in color, and it's in front of you. I can tell you about how dishonored I am, but you've heard it from 1,000 people. How many minority people have to tell you we're offended before you're going to say this is racism? This is the high school or the schoolyard bully that we're dealing with. You've got a little power, you've got the control, and it doesn't matter what the minority thinks. You are the powerful majority. You want entertainment at halftime? Have your good alums go out at halftime and wave their checkbooks in the air, because that's what you're interested in, is the money. You want entertainment with your mascot? Get a puppy. You want political correctness stopped? Yes, you do, because you're white. You live in my shoes, you live in a minority's shoes, and there's no such thing as too much political correctness. We ask to be human beings. Don't parade my spirituality on your campuses. In front of you, I handed out symbols of racism today. You have a copy of it in front of you. Also, you have a report by Dr. Jace Weaver, which is now accepted by the U.S. Department of Justice, of what constitute religious items that are Native American in the school system.
Someone would tell Mr. Two Eagles that he did not leave nine pages. He left. No, I mean, if there are more, we'd like to have them. That's all I'm. Thank you. Thank you.
But it's on the website. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. My name is Monica Gerriton, and I'm a sophomore in political science here at the university. When I first came to U of I in the fall of 1998, I was pretty much apathetic about Chief Illiniwek. I had heard the pro-chief side's arguments, but something didn't sit right with me. I had also heard of Jay Rosenstein's documentary, In Whose Honor, and it sounded like a good way to hear the other side's opinion on the issue. So I made it out to the Progressive Resource Action Cooperative's teach-in this past semester and watched the film I had heard so much about. As soon as it ended, all that was running through my mind was Native American activist Charlene Teeter's voice describing the horrified looks on the faces of her children when they saw Chief Illiniwek for the first time at a U of I basketball game. The heartache I felt for those children soon turned to anger. I knew that I couldn't just sit quietly for the rest of my educational career while Native people were stereotyped and made a mockery of at every sporting event and on every piece of university merchandise. I decided to turn my anger into involvement. I joined the PRC and have been organizing ever since. Instead of quelling my anger, it only increased when I realized our efforts, while gaining campus, national, and international support, were falling on the deaf ears of the people who should have been listening the hardest. So that's why I'm here today, because maybe today you'll understand what you haven't understood for the last 10 years. For over 10 years, UIUC students have asked you nicely, begged with you, pleaded with you to retire your chief. Throughout these years, we have also screamed about you, the Board of Trustees and President of one of the most prestigious universities in the world. We scream about how we, your students, desire a Native American Studies program, and we scream about how you fail to admit that as long as you have your chief, we will never have the reputable American Indian faculty and students necessary for such a program. We scream about how demeaning it is for the chair of this board to embarrass UIUC on national television by claiming that the chief is culture as far as UIUC is concerned. We scream about the thousands of hours we invest in creating authentic, diverse cultural programming on this campus, and still, not only do you not praise us on national television, you do not attend our events or support us as much as you do your chief. We scream because the rest of the world must think we are all like you, more attached to honoring the culture of those people you make little effort to retain at UIUC than creating an environment in which all students can thrive, learn, develop, and graduate from with pride, not embarrassment. In his book, Lies My Teacher Told Me, James Lowen, a recent visitor to this campus, remarks that Native Americans are not and must not be props in a sort of theme park of the past where we go to have a good time and see exotic cultures. As we have been in the past and will continue to in the future as alumni, we now scream about how you fail to listen to the voices of your American Indian students when they tell you how much your chief hurts them. Maybe if we non-Native students scream with them, you will hear. We scream because when you defend your chief, you sound like racists, colonizers, a Columbus. We scream because Columbus is not our hero. We scream because your chief is not our mascot, symbol, or mythological being. We are angry because we do not want reputable faculty and gifted students to reject teaching or attending UIUC because we are known as racists here. We scream because although you have no obligation to educate UIUC's alumni, you are more concerned about making this campus an environment more conducive to their enjoyment of football games than conducive to our education. We scream because you do have an obligation to honor the people, Native, Asian, African, Latino, Middle Eastern, and Caucasian American, or of mixed heritage on this campus. We scream because you have an obligation to us, and you are not being honorable by not listening or responding to us in our demands that you retire your Chief Illiniwek. Thank you.
Again, if you'll leave the statement on the stage, we'd appreciate it. Yes, sir.
My name is Norman Denzin. I'm professor of communications and sociology. I'm honored to be part of these proceedings, and I wish to thank all the involved parties who have made this participation possible. I believe it's possible to hold contradictory attitudes toward one's institution. I've been privileged to teach at this great university for over 30 years. I stand in awe of many of my colleagues and their intellectual accomplishments. I gaze in wonder across the marvelous landscape that frames this beautiful campus. I daily benefit from the actions and policies of our administrators. My chest swells with pride when our athletic teams soar to victory overcoming insurmountable odds. At the same time, I cringe when I see the image of Chief Illiniwek appear on the television screen. Or on the pages of the daily newspaper, or on packages of meat sold by agricultural sales. I find the framed image of the chief offensive. I've listened to my learned colleagues in anthropology, in English, in other fields. I've listened to the testimony of Native Americans. In the best judgment of these people, this mascot is contentious, detrimental, and offensive. I believe that the use of the chief as a mascot has serious educational consequences for this campus. It compromises the intellectual mission of this great university. The chief works against the building of cultural understanding and mutual respect among racial and ethnic groups on this campus. It's clear that this mascot exists at the center of competing discourses. Its meanings are controversial and political. But the times have changed, and the meanings of this symbol have changed. I further believe that it's not appropriate for one group to say that another group is just wrong, to assert that they misunderstand what the symbol means. We cannot shout each other down. We cannot legislate the meanings of this symbol. Calling each other names will not advance the conversation or the dialogue. So I'm at a crossroads. I seek a principle that will guide my actions. There must be a way to show us how to do the right thing, to act with compassion and love, without rancor or bitterness. How can I love an institution that engages in offensive practices? This conflict cannot be resolved in terms of a majority vote. We must seek recourse in a higher moral principle. There is ample precedent for the operation of such a principle. Major civil rights issues in the United States history have been resolved not by a popularity contest or by vote of the majority, but in terms of what was morally correct. African Americans and women were denied the right to vote by a majority of the population. In the present case, the moral principle is clear. It is not appropriate for one racial group to use the imagery of another racial group for political, cultural, or entertainment purposes. Accordingly, a new school symbol must be selected. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honor, distinguished members of the Board of Directors at the University of Illinois, my fellow Americans, and my fellow Illini. My name is Fred Cash. I'm one of nine members of my family by blood or marriage that graduated from this fine institution. I also was a seventh chief for the University of Illinois. I want to start with one quote. Of all areas of study that a student can select, history provides a student with the best opportunity to profit from his studies. So saith Malcolm X. I think we have to look back at history. Illinois, you see the name on the flag, Illini, five tribes, Kaskaskia, Tamaroa, Michigamme, Peoria, Cahokia. Illinois. It's amazing. Every Indian tribe that I've heard mentioned here today was, in fact, an enemy of the Illini. The Illini at one time numbered about 18,000 when they finally sold this land that we very stand on. It was maybe 240. Your Honor, if this were a court of law, you might be challenging some of the opposition as to their standing before this court. What we are talking about is the Illini, five specific tribes, amalgamation formed the tribe, the Illini. What we have here is, in fact, now you know what the Illini felt like, being hit from every single different direction. You know, the Ojibwe, the Potawatomi, the Kickapoo from the north, the Sioux from the, and the Missouri from the west, the Chickasaw, the Choctaw, the Cherokee from the south, and I just heard they were, you know, the Seneca and the Iroquois from the east. I ultimately could not hold this land anymore, and they sold it. If you look at history at West Point, you will find that the Illini were, in fact, the most loyal allies of the French. In fact, in the Battle of Du Quoin, and it would be Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Colonel Washington surrendered to the French and the Illini in the beginning of the French and Indian War. Your Honor, also, some Indians retain sovereign rights to the property, which they should have. Today they have casinos. You notice before anybody, any Native American receives any remuneration from those casinos, they must prove that they belong to that tribe, at least 1/32nd, 1/16th, sometimes 1/4. And yet, we kept talking about Native Americans. The Illini were a First Nation. First Nation. Chief Chicago, maybe that name rings a bell to you. 7 years before George Washington was born, Chief Chicago was in France, basically with Louis XV. 18 years before Thomas Jefferson, 48 years before William Henry Harrison, and 112 years before one of the most finest generals that this country's seen, Sitting Bull, was even born. The Illini were already negotiating with the world leaders. Mr. Kaufman talked about, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have here a letter from Thomas Jefferson to John Baptiste de Coigne, chief of the Kaskaskia, where he was thanking him for help in the Revolutionary War, where John Baptiste asked for school administrators to be sent out. And here's quickly what...
If you have any further remarks, you can leave them on the stage.
Good afternoon. My name is Dino Pollack. I'm a graduate student. I address you today as a present-day student and alumnus of this university and a former Division I student athlete playing football from 1986 to 1990. I address you today as someone who is extremely devoted to racial justice. As a man, as a conscious man of African descent, I find the continued use of the chief at this university absolutely reprehensible, repulsive, extremely racist, and for you to sit up there and continue to condone the use of this symbol severely compromises your moral authority to discuss anything on this campus relating to anybody's behavior. I have found through my study as a conscious African man in this country that ethical and moral appeals to white institutions and white people are in vain. They do not work. Emotional appeals do not work for you. Logical appeals today, people who are far more scholarly and informed than I am have come before you today to offer you logical reasons why this ridiculous mascot should be eliminated. So logic doesn't work. It seems like the only thing that white institutions and white people understand is either litigation or violence. And that is when pressure is placed, and that is when you throw out a few bones, a Valium pill, if you will, to put the people back to sleep so that they will not rise up and continue to fight for justice. Because see, the issue of justice, as Martin Luther King said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We exist in a state of war on this campus in terms of the war between justice and injustice. And right now, we are losing that battle as a university. You, as the Board of Trustees, contrary to popular opinion, are not the final authority on this issue. We do not come to you to ask you for anything. The final authority on this issue is going to be a power much higher than you. And if all of us profess to be the good Christians or Muslims or Jews or people that practice traditional religion, and we know that there's a higher power, you know that you're going to have to answer for your vote on this issue. This campus was founded in 1867. The next year, 77 white men enrolled. 77 white men, not even white women, were on this campus when it was begun. As a person who is the descendant of people who have had to have five constitutional amendments just to bring us within the purview of the laws of this country, I find it absolutely disgusting that I have to come before you again today and say the same thing over and over and over and over again. If litigation or violence is what you want, you will continue this, Chief. And I'm not threatening violence, I'm not threatening litigation. I'm saying that those are the only two things that have seemed to get people of color any type of remuneration in this country in terms of justice. Dr. Clark, John Henry Clark, an eminent African scholar, said that the art of civilization is about the art of being civil. Well, I suggest today that you take the step, the one baby step in a journey of 1,000 miles, and be civil to indigenous peoples and eliminate and kill swiftly this Chief Alanowek. The U of I should become a member of the civilized world of the 21st century and dismiss Chief Alanowek. We are not here to be toilet paper, to be wiped upon.
Agnes Sims, and I'm pro-chief, and I know how it feels just in the last hour to be in the minority. I also believe that having been here since 8 o'clock, that I think there's also the saying, and the last shall be first. Illini, it is fitting that Chief Illiniwek is the honored symbol of the University of Illinois. By means of this symbol, a tribute is paid to those Native Americans who once lived here on this land we call Illinois. By this honored and respected symbol, we're saying we remember them. The chief is not a mascot, as about 100 people have said today. The costume that the chief wears and the dance that he does reminds me of the costumes and the dance that my husband and I saw on Second Mesa, Arizona, when they had their powwows. It is almost exactly the same. We were there.
Please.
Many considered him to be a dignified reminder of an Indian past. I do not understand why Native American activists want to get rid of Chief Illiniwek. If I were one of them, would I not want to have as many symbols as I could to remind everyone of the tribe that was here first? Our Hopi Indian friends spend much time in tribal events working to keep the customs and beliefs of their tribe preserved for their children and grandchildren and their children. This is an important part of their history, and it is not written down, so they are extra busy preserving all of these customs and beliefs verbally. It worries elders that these young people seem not overly confident about and concerned about preserving their culture. If Chief Illiniwek truly offends even one person, could that not be in the eye of the beholder? One person may say, "What a beautiful day," and another says, "The sun is too bright." Is the glass half full or half empty? Jerry Klein, columnist with the Journal Star Peoria, Illinois, entitled an article, "Illiniwek Celebrates Our Rich History." He asked, why is it that Native Americans activists you most hear from seem determined to erase any memory, any celebration, any sign that they once were the only civilization this country possessed? And how, indeed, can we celebrate this heritage without offending someone? He remarked that we have to be careful so as we do not offend certain groups. His article continues, quote, "So we have Chief Illiniwek being called a race-based mascot, which sounds like one of those tired cliches that comes right out of the political correctness handbook. And for some people, the main spokesperson seems to be Charlene Teeters, who was once a student at the University of Illinois. Well, so was I. And I will tell you that Chief Illiniwek is part of my heritage too. These are our Indians, these Braves, these Kickapoos. They are part of our glorious past, and to sacrifice our rich historical traditional traditions because they might offend somebody or because they are perceived by some to be politically incorrect is unthinkable. Let's celebrate this rich past of ours with more Indian dances and Irish ones and Jewish ones.
Thank you. Carol Spindell. Excuse me, I just wanted to summon my assistant, Ms. Casserly. But go ahead. Go ahead.
Sure, sir. My name is Carol Spindell. I'm an adjunct faculty member in the Department of English. I've taught here since 1989. I'm also an alumna. I teach nonfiction writing, and for the past 4 years, I have researched and written a book about the controversy over American Indian sports mascots. Entitled Dancing at Halftime, it is forthcoming in August from New York University Press. When I started the book, I was not convinced either way. But after years of research and interviews, and after following Native American activists and educators around as they speak to state legislators, school boards, and sports fans, I have made up my mind on this issue. Since you have not seen this for yourself, I want to tell you that I have been shocked at how these Indian people are received. Again and again, I observed as they stated their genuine concerns about the effects of stereotyping on their children and young people. Again and again, I watched and listened as they said they were offended. They were ignored, discounted, and angrily attacked for speaking up. How can this be when sports fans, school boards, and university trustees all claim to honor and respect American Indians? This contradiction between the admiration fans genuinely feel for this fictional character and the way they treat living, breathing American Indian people is at the very dark heart of this debate. What has been lacking in this debate for 10 years is historical context. Unfortunately, I can't give you that in 4 minutes. I would just like to say quickly that Americans have divided Indians into two categories, and here I speak of non-Indian Americans, the real and the imaginary. Historically, we have shown little interest in real Indian people. When they speak up, we are quick to dismiss them. Not full-blooded, not traditional, given up their Indian ways, belong to the wrong tribe. We have created laws forcing them to give up their cultures and religions and then refuse to recognize them as real Indians when their cultures change, as all human cultures do constantly. This ambivalence of ours has put Indian people in a real bind. Chief Illiniwek is an imaginary Indian, the kind we have been interested in. Where did he come from? I hear Pine Ridge, home of the Oglala Sioux. That is where we purchased his costume. But his performance cannot be traced to any tribal tradition. It comes to us straight from Buffalo Bill and the Wild West Show. Wild West shows were part of the American circus tradition. They traveled to small towns all over the country between 1900 and 1920, putting on one or two shows under a big top and then moving on. Buffalo Bill and other circus owners employed Indians, mostly from the Sioux Nation, as actors. In another parallel with the University of Illinois, Buffalo Bill claimed his sketches were historically accurate, educational, and morally uplifting. The Wild West shows spawned three forms of entertainment that still exist today: the Western, the rodeo, and the halftime performance. In 1926, while Boy Scouts here were pretending to be Indians and dancing publicly, American Indians were forbidden by law to dance themselves. They did not stop dancing, of course, but they had to do so surreptitiously or else risk punishment. It was not until 1934 and the passage of the Indian Reorganization Act that American Indians could perform their own dances on their own reservation without risking punishment. Buffalo Bill promoted the idea that his show was historical to make a buck. He was all showman, and he knew what business he was in, show business. We are here at a public university. Buffalo Bill died in 1917. You're here in 2000. Please have the courage, and let's end this Wild West show.
I hate to do this, but I have scheduled two more speakers than we have time to hear. I'm sorry. We have Kevin Baldwin and William McCrae. I understand we have to vacate the auditorium for another event, and it's unfortunate we didn't hear everybody. It's my fault that I scheduled too many, and we went a little slower this afternoon than I thought we were going to. So I wish to thank all of you who have participated. The remarks were eloquent on both sides. We've heard a lot, and I believe the together with what we heard today and the input that can we can receive through the emails and correspondence, I'm sure that I'm going to be able to put together a report that adequately states the position of all sides. Pardon? Wasn't that the last one? And I'd like to be reminded that there is still an opportunity to videotape your remarks on the second floor lobby, and those videotape remarks will be considered along with the remarks of today. So, that's finished. They're off now. I'm sorry. If you could submit those in writing to us, I'd appreciate it. I hate to do this. I know you probably all waited very long. I wish to thank you. I wish to thank the staff for volunteering their time in maintaining the atmosphere of the day. It was truly an inspiring set of speeches that we heard today on both sides of the issue, and I thank you all. And if you will all just please exit this auditorium as quickly as possible, as quickly as safely as possible, though, please.